All right, so I think we're here, right? We already talked about how we name these. We start off with adult hemoglobin and fetal hemoglobin. And then sickle cell hemoglobin, we said S. And then we had others. We have C's and D's and E's. And then there got to be too many. And so they started naming them after the place they were discovered. So you'll see some strange-looking hemoglobin. When we talk about hemoglobinopathies, we've already talked about thalassemia, and you thought you got away easy last exam because there weren't many thalassemias. I was waiting till we get to the other hemoglobinopathies, so this week you get hit with thalassemias. Okay, the quantitative, then, were the thalassemias. The qualitatives are the ones that we're going to talk about today, and those are where you just have usually one substitution of an amino acid in a certain position that causes an abnormality. So the way we would write hemoglobin S would be alpha 2 beta 2 has the normal chains, but at the number 6 position, there's a valine inserted in there. Okay, so 6th position of the beta chain.
Okay, so if it was in the alpha chain,
you'd put it in the alpha. But remember, we got 4 alphas, so there's not as big a deal there. Okay? So this shows you valine coming in for glutamic acid, and it's in the number 6 position. So on the beta chain. All right. So qualitative, one of them's abnormal. Usually just one amino acid will do that. Quantitative, it means the chains are normal, but they're diminished in their rate of production. It's quantitative. Mm-hmm. So if we have abnormalities in alpha and betas, then it affects adult hemoglobin. If we have abnormalities in the gamma, it affects fetal hemoglobin. So it depends on what abnormalities we have. So one way of looking at hemoglobinopathies is to put them in one of 4 groups. This is one way to look at them. What they call it is the first group is called aggregating. Aggregating means that it's going to precipitate out either in a crystal or a tactoid. So that would be hemoglobin S and hemoglobin C. 2 means unbalanced. That would be the thalassemias. 3 means unstable, which means that the hemoglobin is real susceptible to oxidation. And so it would precipitate out. And then 4 means you have an abnormal heme function. And when that happens, the affinity to carry oxygen is altered a little bit. So we're going to talk about some of these. So which of the following is considered an embryonic hemoglobin? Remember that from yesterday? You know when they stop? You want to vote? Okay. Okay, it's Portland. Embryonic is different than fetal, right? Okay, embryonic's the real early one. Okay, what's the composition of the globin chains that make up fetal hemoglobin? Just raise your hand with 4 fingers or 2.
What's that?
Just put the number of fingers up that you want to vote. Okay, what is it?
C.
C, right. Okay, only after 3 to 6 days after an acute bleed, one would expect to see what? Okay, it's D, increased retics. I don't know. I can't get it over. Anyway, it's D.
So would the hematocrit not be decreased after 6 days?
Does before that.
So like 2-3 days?
Yeah.
A few hours.
A few hours if you have a drink of water. Because hematocrit is just a percentage, right?
Right.
So as soon as you have fluid come in, it's going to be altered. So it takes 3 to 6 days to see the retic. All right, so let's talk about hemoglobin S. That's the most famous. So the pathology behind this is at the number 6 position in the beta chain, there's one amino acid substitution. And so valine is substituted for glutamic acid. So what happens is, as the oxygen decreases in the hemoglobin, it polymerizes in the red cell. So you get the tactoid formation of the red cell. And then when the red cell becomes rigid, as it goes through the spleen, usually, it will cause those sickle cells to come out, and so it breaks them down, and you get a chronic hemolytic anemia. So if you have homozygous SS, you have what's called sickle cell disease. So this is the homozygous state. So you have an SS. And it occurs in about 0.3 to 1.3% of African Americans. And people that have this disorder have problems with fever. They have bone deformities. They have fluid on their joints. They have loss of renal function. They have priapism. They have enlarged liver, ocular manifestations, leg ulcers. They get frequent infections. Eventually, their spleen stops functioning, and they can have complication in pregnancy. They can have cardiovascular accidents. So they can have this acute condition. It can happen anytime that there's a decrease in oxygen saturation. It's an elongated erection. So if you see a patient that has sickle cell anemia, remember we said that when we were looking at those cells that they can elongate up to a certain point, and then when they hit one point that's like this, this one's reversible, but then there's this transition. When they become like this, they can't go back. So when they go through the spleen or when they go through small vessels, they plug up the small vessels. So that's usually why you have all the problems with them. So these are the things that cause the problem. So there's a constant breakdown of red cells, which causes the chronic hemolytic changes. And so you see the same kind of thing that you saw in thalassemias, and that is all the bones start to try to make enough red cells. So you see all of the bone plates being very active, and so you see the hair on end bone plates. In kids, they also have what's called dactylitis, which is inflammation of the digits. It's also called the hand-foot syndrome. And again, the reason they have it is because there are small vessels in the hands and the feet, and they get plugged up with these sickling cells. So it causes painful swelling, and it causes deformities sometimes that last throughout lifetime. So this is a complication that was seen in the patient that it had the hand-foot disease because of sickle cell. They also have a problem in the spleen. This is where these sickle cells are taken out. And so in the spleen, they will plug up the spleen, and eventually they'll actually cause a malformation of the spleen. So it's like they don't have any spleen at all. So it's called functional splenia, which just means that the spleen's still there, but it doesn't function. And that leads to what they call an autosplenectomy. In other words, the spleen becomes dysfunctional. They don't have a functional spleen, so they call it autosplenectomy. And they also have kidney damage for the very same reason. The small vessels in the kidney are affected, plugged up, and it causes the kidney problems. They also have problems with ulcers forming. So any of the small vessels can become occluded. So they get ulcers. And these ulcers have a hard time healing. So it's because of the decrease in peripheral circulation, especially in the legs. So what you see in a homozygote in the laboratory would be that the white cells are usually increased. The platelets are normal or slightly increased. Their bone marrow is trying to replace all the cells, so it has normoblastic hyperplasia. They have a breakdown of cells, so they're producing lots. They have an increase in storage iron. They have a normocytic normochromic anemia. Their hemoglobin can be anywhere 6.5 to 10. Their retics are increased, so you may see 15% retics, so anywhere from about 10 to 20. The RDW is increased because of the size of the cells. You have polychromasia, you have codocytes, you have Hal Jolly bodies, you have nucleated reds out in the peripheral circulation. And the thing that's most diagnostic, of course, is looking for drepanocytes. So this is a person that has SS. So the drepanocytes you don't see in a heterozygous form. So usually only the double dose can you see these nice drepanocytes. This one's probably irreversible, but this one might not be. This one probably is for sure. This one's not. So remember that they can be reversed if they can get enough oxygen into them. So the way that we have to diagnose all the hemoglobinopathies again is through electrophoresis. So in a homozygote, you have no normal A. You have two abnormal genes. So you have 80 to 99% hemoglobin S. You might have a slight increase in A2, and of course you compensate by making hemoglobin F, so you can have anywhere from 1 to 20%. Okay, so if you only inherit one abnormal gene, it's called sickle cell trait, or you can put SA. So one normal and one abnormal gene. So this individual then has one normal beta gene and one abnormal beta gene. So you could write it beta gene, you know, B for beta and a BS for the other gene. So in African Americans in the United States, it's about 8%. And most of the time there's no clinical symptoms with trait. They may have blood in the urine every once in a while. But you'll remember from other classes that if you have sickle cell trait, it confers an immunity for the falciparum malaria. So what do you see in the laboratory? Not too much. You may see codocytes, which just tells you hemoglobinopathy, and usually the hematocrit and hemoglobin are normal. So this is SA. So the only thing really that you're going to see here are codocytes. So you have to have electrophoresis.
Do the thalassemias offer any protection against malaria?
No. So it's the receptor on the outside of the cell that's different. So a heterozygote is going to have 50 to 65% A and about 35 to 45% S. So you might see a slight increase in A2, but your F is going to be normal because they have enough to carry the oxygen. So in the laboratory, what do we do? Well, we can do a solubility test. And the way you do this is there's a couple of ways. One that's not as easy is to take a drop of blood, put a cover glass on it, seal it so you can't get oxygen under there. And what you have in there as a reducing agent is sodium metabisulfite. That reduces the oxygen tension, and it will cause the cells to sickle if they are abnormal. So then you look for the sickling. It's easier if you use what we call a tube solubility method. And this is, again, the sodium metabisulfite. But it's in a kit form where you just add the reagent to the cell, and then you look to see if there's aggregation or sickling. So it's called the aggregation that gives you the cloudy color. So you can see, looking at those two, that one you can see the lines behind and one you can't. So this is a negative test. This is a positive test for sickling. So any aggregating hemoglobin would cause that. So S or C. So the definitive diagnosis comes from hemoglobin electrophoresis. And so we get really good at hemoglobin electrophoresis. And the medium that we usually use is cellulose acetate, and at a pH of about 8.6. That's the routine hemoglobin electrophoresis that we do. So you remember how to remember the where the origin is and how fast they travel. So here's the origin that you put them on. So C is crawl, S is slow, A is accelerated. Now you can see from this picture that we're going to look at a lot of different hemoglobins that migrate. Okay, so here is an electrophoresis pattern. We always use controls. So here's A, here's S and F, S and A, C and A, A and H. So you see where they migrate. So they're going from the cathode to the anode. So here's where we put them on.
Are all those controls?
They are. So this is our patient right here with the arrow. This is an SS. So we have S, and we have a little bit of F. So you don't see any A, because here's A. If there had been some, it had been right here. So on the smear, if we can find a drepanocyte, it's great. We may not find one. What we'll see is Hal Jolly bodies, codocytes, probably nucleated reds, polychromasia, because of all the hemolysis that takes place. So here's a trait. So in the trait, we only see codocytes, probably. So when we electrophorese this patient, we see S and we see A. So that tells us we have a trait. Okay, so our pH then is about 8.6, 8.4, right around in there. So one of the things you need to know for the test and forevermore is we're going from this, okay? We need to look at, here's our origin. We need to look at where normal would be. So that's A, right? Okay, here's sickle trait, so S and A. We'll come to the other ones. Okay, here's C and S. This is normal cord right here, so F and A. Okay, so remember what order they come in. And this is at about 8.4 to 8.6 on cellulose acetate.
Why do
we
have a few letters under?
Because those are also hemoglobins that we're going to talk about. So if you get a hemoglobin that is in the same position, how are you going to tell the difference? So she's asking all these letters. These are all hemoglobins. So A2 ends here. It migrates with C. So if you had to differentiate those, how could you? Remember that Lepore migrates with S? Okay, what you do is you do a different electrophoresis. You use a different medium. So now we use agar, use citrate agar, and we run it at a different pH. So now we use about 6.0 to 6.2. What that does is changes up the migration rates. So here's a control that has C, S, F, and A. But do you notice they're not the same? Okay, so this is a way to differentiate ones that will migrate at the same level. We'll talk about it as we go through. So if we just look at hemoglobin SS and SA, if we look at our peripheral smear, the only thing we're going to see with SA is codocytes. All the other things that we mentioned come with SS. Okay, if we do sickling test and electrophoresis, that will differentiate our SS and SA. Because if you remember, you don't have any normal A. So you have an increased depth. So that would put it down here as an SS. And if you have some A, then it's an SA. Okay, you notice the solubility test is positive in both because they both have abnormal hemoglobin. So what do you do for these people? You really don't need to treat the traits, usually. But for the homozygous people, bone marrow transplant is really the only way to cure it. Otherwise, it's just supportive therapy. So there are lots of things they do to try to reduce the sickling, but it's not going to be cured. It's just going to be supportive. Okay, so that's S. Hemoglobin C. Okay, in this instance then, for hemoglobin C, we have an abnormal beta. Okay, and this time, we have a C trait, so we have lysine instead of valine as the abnormality. So if we just put a lysine amino acid there for the glutamic acid, this time we get C. So it's C is just almost like A because C crystallizes out and it makes the cell so it can't deform as it goes through the spleen. So the cell becomes real rigid, gets taken out, and it also has a tendency to lose some of its membrane, and so it becomes a microspherocyte. So you get loss of potassium and water from the cell, makes it real rigid. So this just shows you that in hemoglobin S, valine's the problem. Hemoglobin C, it's just lysine. Same thing happens, though. It lyses the cell. Okay, if you have a CC, double dose, it's not quite as bad as SS. So it's a mild to moderate hemolysis. Spleen gets large. They get cholelithiasis, which means inflammation of the gallbladder. They can have gallstones from the breakdown of the cells. They can have an aplastic crisis that occurs just like in S. They have joint pain. They have abdominal pain. And if you're a CA, you really don't have any problems at all. It's called a C trait. So with a CC disease, what you're going to look for on the smear would be the microspherocytes and the C crystals. The retics are going to be slightly increased, about 4 to 8%. Okay, your hematocrit's a little bit better in this disease than in SS. But about 30 to 100% of the cells are going to be target cells. And if you try to look for crystals, it helps. So if you remember what C crystals look like, Washington Monument, right? Okay, the trait is quite prevalent. Not as prevalent as SA, but it still is quite prevalent, 2-3%. But most of the time they are asymptomatic. So what you see then in this disease is target cells, so lots of target cells and a hypocholemia, maybe a mild one. So here's a peripheral smear. Really don't see much. In a CA, all you see are target cells usually. So again, what we have to do is electrophoresis. So the homozygote's going to be 100% C. Heterozygotes 30 to 50, somewhere around in there. And then there are other abnormal hemoglobins that migrate where C does. So you have a variety of C that's called Harlem. And then you have hemoglobin O Arab that migrates there and hemoglobin E. So on electrophoresis, you're going to have some problems if you might suspect some of those others. But here's our patient. We're expecting to see C because we saw this, right? So we see a C crystal. So here's our patient, and it's 100% C. Okay, if they just a trait, then we'd expect to see it right here. So we have C and we have A. And all we see are target cells. So it's real easy to distinguish these. So on the smear, you're going to see target cells, microspherocytes, and maybe some crystals if you're lucky. Otherwise, you just see target cells. Okay, you have to do electrophoresis. The first one you do is cellulose acetate. And if you suspect other ones, because these three are going to migrate all together, so C, E, and O. And then if you have to do an acid citrate, you can. But in a CC disease, you're going to get 100% C, and in a CA, you get about half, but not quite.
Okay, so what would make you suspect through the E and O?
Okay, we're going to go through those.
Okay,
for these Cs, you don't usually have to treat, even homozygotes. and for sure not CAs. So it's not severe. Okay, what if you have one gene that's an S and one gene that's a C? Then you have SC disease. So this is a disease that's somewhere in between SS and CC. So it's an SC. So they have splenomegaly, they have retinopathies, problems with their eyes, they have problems with bones, muscles, joints, have blood in the urine, they have pulmonary diseases, they have the splenic problems, they have vaso-occlusive crises so that these cells precipitate out, especially during pregnancy and during surgery or some other medical trauma. So both of their beta chains are abnormal. One's a C and one's an S. Okay, it's less frequent and more severe, well, and less severe than sickle, but it's more severe than sickle trait or C. So the red cells that you see, about equal amounts of S and C, you compensate a little bit with hemoglobin F. But what you see on the smear are target cells, and then you have stromatocytes, you have kinesocytes, and hopefully you can find some SC crystals. So the sickling isn't there. That's not the main thing that you see. It's the birds in flight. And the hemoglobin puddles, that's why you get the kinesocytes, and also the increase in MCH. So can you tell a SC crystal now? Okay, so this, you can see that they start to puddle, so they get the kinesocytes. Okay, their bone marrow is normal blastic hyperplasia, and the way you diagnose it is with hemoglobin electrophoresis. So they're going to have S, and you're going to have C, and then a little bit of F to compensate, but you don't have any A, because you don't make it. So here's our patient. So they have C and S. So what you look for on the smear is going to be this, sickle, SC, birds in flight, this, these, podocytes, kinesocytes. Okay, this one actually has a nice little sickling effect right here, but these are SCs. Okay, so in the diagnostic scheme, you're going to see target cells, maybe crystals. Okay, rare sickle cell, your MCV can be normal or decreased or even increased depending on how many crystals you have. You do the sickle cell test, they're going to be positive because it is aggregating. So then you do hemoglobin electrophoresis, and you're going to see bands at S and C. Okay, if you need to, because S and D and G all migrate together, as well as C and E and O, you could do citrate to confirm that. So what do they do for these people? Again, there's really no cure. What you do is try to give them supportive therapy. So transfusions, bone marrow transplants, the only cure. So there's a summary of the morphology for S and C. Okay, so S, it's really nice if you can find a nice sickle like these. Okay, SC, birds in flight. And then C, Washington Monument. Okay, so you got any questions about S or C? Okay, D, you got to go clear to Z and pass. Okay, with D, you have an abnormality in the beta chain again, but it's the number 121. So your glutamic acid is replaced by a glycine. Now, these are real neat because there are lots of variants that are found. So there's a hemoglobin D Punjab and a hemoglobin D Los Angeles. Those are the most frequent variants that you see for hemoglobin D. Okay, the reason it's named Punjab is because hemoglobin D was discovered in India, in the province of Punjab. But the African Americans, most of them have the hemoglobin D Los Angeles. So it's rare. A homozygous person just has a mild anemia, and some of them even are asymptomatic. So it's not a big medical problem to have hemoglobin D.
So why or how would you find it in a big problem? Like, why would anyone suspect it?
Well, they may have bouts of hemolysis, but most of the time they don't. But if they come in and they're being tested for sickle cell, then you wouldn't see any aggregation in this. But you'd do an electrophoresis and see that it's deep. So there are screens where there are large African-American population screening places where you would be screened for these kinds of abnormalities. So these people usually have normal indices. You can see target cells, just like you can see them in anything. And usually no problem with hemolysis. So when you do your electrophoresis, if they're homozygotes, they have about 95% D. And then A2. The thing that's going to confuse you here is that it migrates with S, but it doesn't sickle. So if you do your solubility test, it'll be negative. But when you migrate it, it's going to go at the same spot as S, so you got to figure out what's going on. Okay. If you change your electrophoresis pattern and you put it with citrate auger in acid, then it migrates with A. So it would separate them out. So here's our peripheral smear with D. All you see are target cells. So what we're looking at is target cells. We do the electrophoresis. We find that we've got a spot in the S position. We do our solubility test, it's negative. So with that, we think hemoglobin D. So if it's 95% at that place, it's DD. And if it's only about 30 to 50% with some A, then you got DA. Okay, they don't usually need to be treated. Okay, we're on E now.
How do you quantify it? How do you know if it's 95%?
Do you remember how you did electrophoresis and you divided it up and took the total number of counts and figured a percentage? Okay. Okay, E. Okay, this is another lysine for glutamic acid, but in a different position. This one has kind of an unstable hemoglobin when you stress it with decreased oxygen. And so this one has more of an effect on the oxygen dissociation curve. It's shifted to the right, meaning that E has a decreased affinity for oxygen. It can't hang on to it as much. So this one is found in Southeast Asians, a large percentage, 15 to 20%. So in the homozygous form, it's real mild or asymptomatic, or it can be microcytic anemia, and they have a decreased erythrocyte survival. If it's a heterozygote, they really don't have many symptoms, but they're still microcytic. So this is one that's a hemoglobinopathy that you'd have to differentiate from thalassemia and iron deficiency, because they're usually microcytic. So the hemoglobin can be about 12 to 13. Your MCV is decreased. You get target cells. You get increased red cells. And what else does that? Thalassemias, right? Beta thals. Okay. You get normal or decreased retics. You've got to do electrophoresis. So if you do electrophoresis, you find E. And it migrates with A2 and C. So here's your peripheral smear. All you're seeing is microcytosis, maybe some target. So now you've got targets, you've got microcytosis. Next thing you do, you're going to look at the red count. It's going to be increased. Your MCV is decreased, so you're thinking, iron deficiency. But you do your iron studies and they're normal. So you eliminate iron deficiency, but you still got thalassemia and hemoglobin E. So you can do electrophoresis, and you see bands at A, and you see them at CEO. Then you switch methods. You do citrate auger, and you see a band at A because E migrates with A in citrate. So now, depending on how much you have, you can either have EE or EA. So they don't usually have to treat these people. Okay. This is interesting because this is an abnormal quantitative and an abnormal qualitative. So there's no rule that says that you can only have one kind of hemoglobinopathy. So if you get the beta thal gene abnormality, so a decrease in the beta chain, and you get an S, then you're an S beta. So an S beta thal. And this reduces the rate of the beta A, results in a predominance of the beta abnormal gene, the S gene. So depending on whether or not your beta makes any beta chains at all, if you're a beta zero, then you have an anemia that sort of looks like sickle cell anemia. If you're a beta plus, then you have more something like an SC disease. So it depends on how much beta you make. But they do have splenomegaly. So what you see in red cells is usually microcytic hypochromic. So it's going to look like a thal. But when you do the electrophoresis, you're going to find out they have S. So if it's a beta zero, then they have mostly S, and then variable amounts of F. Okay, if it's a beta plus, then they have a lower amount of S present. So what would you see on the smear? See some weird things because you've got thalassemia and you've got S. So you're going to see mostly target cells, but what's this? Pycnocyte. Okay. So you're going to see abnormal hemoglobins, right? So when you do your electrophoresis, this is the patient. Okay, they've got A, so we know they're a beta plus, right? But look at how much S they have. You look over here, and it looks a lot like an S, right? But lots of codons. So what are we going to do? We're going to see microcytic hypochromic, and what usually is S if it's just SS? Normocytic normochromic. So this is putting us into thinking it's thalassemia with microcytic hypochromic. Okay, you're going to see maybe a drepanocyte, depending on how much S they have, nucleated reds. MCV is going to be decreased like a thal. Okay, your RDW is increased. They got lots of different sizes. But you do hemoglobin electrophoresis, and you see it at the S. So you quantitate your A2. Remember what it is in beta thals? Your A2 levels? You'll remember by Friday, right? It's increased. So you're still thinking thal, but now you've got an S. So it's a S beta thal. So they have to treat them the same as sickle cell anemia. Okay, others. These are the fun ones. So what you do in the other group is you remember the names that go with a particular disorder. So these are called methemoglobinemia and cyanosis. So what's met mean? What's methemoglobin? Iron is in the ferric form, right? That's methemoglobin. Okay, does it carry oxygen very well? Nope. So you have blue lips, blue fingertips, blue everything because you can't carry oxygen. So that's cyanosis. So the names of these are depending on whether it's we call them M, first of all, standing for methemoglobin. And then we found that there were different kinds of methemoglobin. And so they started naming them for where they found them. So hemoglobin M means that it's a methemoglobin, but there are variants. So Iwate, Hyde Park, Boston, Milwaukee, Saskatoon, Those are all M hemoglobins, meaning they're met hemoglobins. They don't carry oxygen. And the patients don't carry oxygen well, so they have blue lips, blue fingertips. The reason they do is because the abnormality comes with a substitution close to the heme portion. And so it affects it and makes it a met hemoglobin. So you have cyanosis showing up at birth if it's in the alpha chain, and it usually takes 2 to 4 months if it's in the beta chain. Okay, we also have abnormal hemoglobins that have altered oxygen affinity. So you remember, you studied the dissociation curve, the oxygen dissociation curve, where oxygen is released from hemoglobin, and it shifts along that curve depending on how you need to release the oxygen. Well, if you have an increased oxygen affinity, it means the hemoglobin molecule hangs on to it and it won't give it off to the tissue. If you have a decrease, it means it gives it off real easy. So there are ones that are associated with increased oxygen affinity. So it means it hangs on to it, so you make more red cells to compensate. And so you get polycythemia. So you make more red cells. And you shift your dissociation curve to the left. So the names of those are Chesapeake, Olympia, Wood, Yakima, San Diego, Rainier. So all you have to do is remember, what are those names associated with? It's usually what they ask you on the national exam. Not that you have to tell them the amino acid substitution or anything. They just say, what are these associated with? And you'd say an increased oxygen affinity. Okay? And so the patient is polycythemic because they need to make more red cells. Okay, decreased oxygen affinity, meaning they try to let go of it, but they don't have enough oxygen in the tissue, and so they have cyanosis. They also make more red cells because they want to carry more oxygen. But it's called Beth Israel Providence and Yosiazuka, someplace that I don't know. I've never been there, Yosiazuka. You been there? Yeah, it's in Japan, but where? North?
It's kind of common name. There is one close to
my hometown. Ah, so that's where they discovered this. So most of these patients, asymptomatic, but it could cause some problems. Okay, so the whole thing is, if the hemoglobin has a high oxygen affinity, usually you get more erythrocytes. So you shift your oxygen dissociation curve to the left. And so a decreased amount of oxygen actually gets to the tissue. And so remember, your kidney has a sensor in it. It'll sense that you don't have enough oxygen. So it's like going up to the top of a mountain and your kidney starts spitting out erythropoietin to make more cells. So that's why people at altitude have more higher hematocrits than people at lower. Okay, if you have a hemoglobin problem where you have a decreased oxygen affinity, usually you don't have a problem, but it shifts your oxygen dissociation curve to the right, and so you get an increased amount of oxygen to your tissues because it can't hang on to it. Okay. There is one that's called a congenital Heinz body hemolytic anemia. So does that tell you what it is? Inherited, making Heinz bodies. And remember what Heinz bodies are? Precipitated hemoglobin. Okay, so they precipitate out in Heinz bodies. As it goes through the spleen then, what happens to them? They get taken out. So you have a short survival of your red cells. Produces a normocytic normal chromic anemia. So you're breaking down red cells, you get yellow. So it's jaundice. Spleen gets enlarged because it's trapping all those cells. They start producing a real dark urine. And the test that you have to remember that tests for unstable hemoglobin is called the positive heat instability test. Okay, the names of the hemoglobins are Belfast, Savannah, St. Louis, Tacoma, Hammersmith, Zurich, Seattle, Gunhill. So what do you do for looking for congenital Heinz body hemolytic anemia? Those abnormal hemoglobins, you do a heat stability test. And what happens is they precipitate out as Heinz bodies. So you see a normocytic, normochromic anemia. You see retics because it's hemolytic. You're trying to make more cells. You can see basophilic stippling. You can see bite cells because, remember, as they go through the spleen, if they're not taken out, they just take the Heinz body out. Okay, so what we do is we could do an osmotic fragility, and it's abnormal after 24 hours incubation. We could do hemoglobin electrophoresis, but only about half of them are those abnormal hemoglobins that I told you about. So the biggest thing is the heat instability test, and that's positive. The other one that's a backup for that is the isopropyl stability test, and that's positive. So this is what you see. You just see evidence of hemolytic anemia. So you see polychromatophilia. You see big cells because they're actually, if you were to stain them with brilliant crystal blue, what are they? Reticulocytes. So here's your brilliant crystal blue stain. Look at the number of retics. Okay. So what we do is on the peripheral smear, if we see basophilic stippling, degmocytes, contracted cells, polychromasia, we do a supravital stain. We look for Heinz bodies. Okay, we'd also see if our retics are increased, we do a heat stability test backed up by isopropyl stability test, and they're positive. So what we say is unstable hemoglobin. Okay, could be any of those that I named. So Seattle, Dunhill, all those. So usually you don't have to treat them, but if they have a lot of hemolysis, one of the things they'll do is take out their spleen, because the spleen is what takes out the abnormal cells. So if you don't have spleen, your cells live longer. And then you avoid anything that's going to cause the precipitation of those Heinz bodies. Okay, so tomorrow, don't look at that question. Okay, we'll do it tomorrow.
Oh, you're here.